Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Go Loud. Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you in the middle of turning your house into a home?
Get down to Right Style Furniture, an Irish family-run spot that's actually sound. I won't sell you a couch that looks like it's had to be found in a skip.
The house package deals are unreal. Sofas, beds, dining sets. The full walks from just $3,649.
Plus, they're open 7 days a week and open late on Thursdays and Fridays in Fonthill and Omni. Handy if you're walking all day as well.
They're in Fonthill, Belgard and now Omni Park. I got my corner sofa off them and it's chef's kiss.
I'd live in that sofa, you know that?
Sure, you'd have to call the fire brigade to get you over. Right price, right style, right now.
Visit www.roystyle.ie.
And when you shop in store, tell them Terrence and Calvin sent you, and they'll throw a discount on top of that as well. So get down to Roystyle Furniture today.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in the ground. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Episode 259 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, yes.
COB. And this week, I'm joined by
Ryan Tuberty.
Welcome. Well, how did I do?
Do you know what? That was a perfect 10.
Was it good?
Pomossing. We were having a bit of shooting the breeze before you came on, and just to tell your listeners that, you know, there was a little nervousness about it. Okay, here we go. We'll hit the ground running. And you just were like an ice skater. You just jumped up in the air, pirouetted, landed on the blades, and we're off.
Well, back at the races.
Good. How are you feeling?
I'm nervous. I'm getting a little bit nervous. We were over last week and it was just me, Calvin and the producer.
Yeah.
And I was even a bit nervous then. I was like, but it doesn't help that they got the whole building done up.
Yeah, yeah. But they really wanted to make it a very special comeback for you.
Just for me. Just for me. I'm not making them that much.
Yeah, you have.
He was saying that the woman on the door downstairs thinks like he's high up in here.
Yeah.
But like when there's issues and all, she
pulls
him.
But tell him why. Remember I created the video.
He done a video pretending that he was going to be CEO of the day. And I don't know if she didn't get the memo, but she actually thought he was the CEO of like Bauer Media.
Now, I was wearing a Nike tracksuit with a pink toy over
that would
it.
That would it. That's what threw
that's
her.
That's what sold that's it for what her.
Well, so like, when there's issues in the building, she'd just be pulling Terrence on the way in and be like, this needs to go, like, this wasn't collected today and all. He was like, go look into it.
I was going
to
say, you'll roll with it.
I playing up to it. I hope she doesn't listen. I keep saying to her, I'll look into that. I'll have a meeting with the staff and all, they'll be saying, I haven't a clue what's going on in the building.
She let me bring an electric scooter in last week and you're not allowed.
That's because you're friendly with the boss.
That's where it is. She see me coming in with Terrence. Go ahead.
You must be important by default.
Ryan, have you any interview tips for me?
Do you need them?
At moments, like, I remember we had Coolio on the podcast a couple of years ago and I mentioned that he might have fell off.
Yeah.
No, you're not might have. Like, you definitely said it to him.
I definitely told Coolio he fell off at some stage and he snapped. So I have a tendency to jump in with a question. Now when something comes into your mind, obviously you think about things a little bit better than me. Because you're in the game a lot longer. You wouldn't have lasted that long.
And I'm still going. just a different arena.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think so. I think that you mentioned being a bit nervous at the start.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. I'm doing this books podcast live show. And this sounds like a plug. It's not. The point I'm making is,
plug-a.
For the first time in ages, I'll be in front of a live audience. I was in front of one for 20 years every Friday or Saturday for five. And I'm actually quite nervous about this now. And at 52, having done it for 20 years, a friend of mine who works in the West End and sings in Les Mis and all the rest of it, he said, I heard you saying the other day you're feeling a bit nervous. He said, that's great. He said, that's the juice. Mm. That's the energy.
That's what you're looking for.
That's the fuel. Like if you rocked up here today, either of you, and just said, yeah, you know, it's just another day at the office. You have to have a bit.
You lose the spark, don't you?
I think so. Because you're, it's on. And there's quite an adrenaline thing about being in front of a microphone. I mean, obviously, it's needy. I don't think anyone who sits in front of a microphone isn't needy.
Yeah, but... I think especially with live shows, though, I think that's a
live
bit
live is
the half damn butterfly.
Well, you did the live shows. And,
yeah, we've done 11, 12 live shows. Our last one was in the Board Gospel. Yeah, right in what you're saying, because one live show on Vicar Street we did a few years ago, I wasn't so nervous and I couldn't tell why. And that's the show I'm most disappointed with.
Isn't
I remember leaving going, I just wasn't really with it. And I think it was the nerves. I don't.
Because you didn't have the nerves.
Yeah, I think so. I think I was too calm. I think the nerves is what keeps us sharp.
Joe, what funny thing about the Late Late was, so you'd have these big Irish actors, and by actors I mean male and female, who come from Ireland and had made it big abroad. So you take someone like Gabriel Byrne or Liam Neeson even, or Colin Farrell. Or Fassbender, like they'd all come in and you'd say, how are you lads? And they'd go, yeah, you know, okay. So yeah, you're on Fallon there and you're on Letterman there and you're on the other guy. Yeah. I said, you're a bit, I think it was, it's still late.
Yeah.
I said, what? He said, they're all watching this one.
Yeah.
None of them were. I said, who are they all? Granny's watching it. The mother's watching it. Yeah. The aunties are watching it. Well, you were on the Late not too long ago. And your whose mother was it? Your mother
when
in the audience.
I was there.
I mean, it's so local and it's so different that you have all these rock stars who are nervous.
Yeah.
So if they're nervous, everyone get nervous.
Posh,
it's like I did this thing recently, the assembly, you know, where the neurodiverse people asked, you know, about 30 of them ask you questions for about, I was there for about 3 hours. But each one got up to stand up and I was very, I was full of admiration for them because I just thought it's really difficult. You know, anyone in this room knows, standing up in public forum in front of people, it's not nice.
Oh, it's
people get really, really upset. They won't sleep for weeks if they have to give a presentation. So it's not that nice. But nerves are good. That's what I'm saying. Nerves are your friend, weirdly.
Yeah,
you can control them.
When we were on the Late Late, Calvin, that's
the most rattle I've ever been.
Was it?
Yeah, I do, like, genuine. Not that I wouldn't do it again. If it was to compare the two, I didn't feel anywhere near as nervous walking out into the Bar Gosh. The Bar Gosh, I was at 10 with, like, excitement. I couldn't wait to get out there.
Yeah, you're buzzing.
And I was shaking. I was rattled like that. Waiting to go on to the Late Late. I don't know what it was.
No, I do know. I'll tell you what it was. It is because it's 60-year-old institution that is part and parcel of who we are. It's massive. It's Gay, Pat, me, Patrick. You know, it's so big. And as we now know, obviously, Gay is the favourite. nothing goes by, lads. But no, I'm just...
I'm okay.
Fuck.
I'm only starting.
Yeah.
No, but...
You wouldn't have us on.
Yeah. Hey, touche. Shit, fair play. That was good.
Sharp, isn't he? Yeah,
that was good.
That's the
think I might go in for that operation myself. Tweak things up a little bit. Yeah. Speed it up. Anyway, that's the crack. But that's why, you particularly for that show, it's so big. And yeah, the nerves, that doesn't surprise me. That
I don't like the entrance where you have to like stand on the stage and the doors are closed and then you have to wait and then the doors open and all. Like that is,
it wasn't like that in my day. It's all a bit different. They
but like, I was standing beside him and like I couldn't even touch it. You were further than an arm's length away.
Did the door do that?
And you come through the big doors and I'm like, you're just standing there waiting to be revealed.
And then, boom.
And then you're like, what if I forget how to walk? Yeah, like, what way do I walk?
Hey,
what if I walk funny?
The amount of female guests who come in and go on, because they're a few steps down and a couple of steps up and they're going, if I had known, I wouldn't have worn these shoes and these heels. So it's all of that stuff. You're going, what's going on? And then it changes once a year for the toy show and it is the best. That was the greatest experience of my life, the toy show, once a year, because even the meanest people in Meanland, that is to say the internet, loved it. Everyone got really nice for a night. For one night, it's like they went, oh, come on. You know, it was beautiful. And anyway, you didn't even ask me about that, but I was just saying it.
We'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We actually can't let him go without asking, because we asked Patrick Kilty as well.
Yeah, well, go on.
And it's the very first episode back.
Yeah, you may as well. Go on.
Ryan, do you piss in the shower?
Oh, no.
I don't believe you, Ryan.
I know you do, because you said that you either do or you're a liar.
You are good.
The truth of the matter is, there's a third way to that, and you didn't give that as a choice, so that's not fair.
What was the third one then?
Don't do it. Go to the toilet. So it's not an either or. Anyway, there you go, lads. That's the answer to that one.
Oh, I'm let down.
Oh.
I really thought you were one of us.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We know he's going for a career in politics. I can see he's shaping her up. He's shaping her up. That's what's happening.
Never rule it out.
He's dodging these questions.
Look, listen to Micheál Martin. So I got some tips.
Yeah, I have a singer for you, Ryan.
I don't like the singers, lads.
Yeah, do you know what we they've kind of went a bit dormant for a while. I think we need to start bringing them back, but more tailored towards the guests specifically, I think.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? So I have one for you, Ryan. Would you rather have a guest on The Late Late Show be heckled by an audience member or a guest on your radio show who can't stop cursing?
I fancy a heckle.
Yeah?
I like a heckle because a heckle brings out the kind of spontaneous stand-up sort of factor. And I used to love on The Late Late when things went a bit out of control. That's why I love The Toy Show so much, because Dylan Moran said that children are like little drunk people and they were wandering around singing and bumping into walls. Like, they're brilliant. So, like, with a good heckle, if you can box clever with it and they're not like too drunk or too stupid, that could be fun. So I'm going to go for a heckle.
It's all about chill, yeah?
Good chill.
You always do it anytime we've did a radio interview. You always ask the producer, like, sorry if we can course on this. And they're like, please don't. And Terrence, I'm like, Terrence, don't. What are you doing? Like, what are you thinking about coursing?
I don't. The thing is, I probably wouldn't even course anyways. But then when you tell me not to course, I'm like,
Yeah. You're in
trouble. No, I can't.
I think what podcasts have done, it means it's redundant now.
It's a free for all.
You hear a lot of the, especially the kind of the English ones, and they were in the BBC for years and years. And now they're saying, oh, fuck it. And, you know, and they're delighted and they love cursing. But it feels very performative, doesn't feel natural to them at all. And you're kind of going, yeah, that's not your thing. Whereas if it's your thing, you know, it's like authenticity. You guys must, you can just, listeners, viewers, they smell it, they see it. If they see fake, they just go, no, I'm not buying that.
Course, 100%.
So curse, don't curse, I don't care.
Yeah.
So you're more than welcome to course as well.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
I suppose it could just butcher a radio interview, wouldn't it? Because you're constantly hitting the button and wherever.
Yeah, it would be if it's a live radio show. Yeah. And you're, like, that's just, there's no joy in that. Because you know what I mean? You just have to, I don't know, never happened really. The odd time on The Late Late, like Brian Cox from Succession, you know, fuck off. You know, that guy, he came on and he effed and blinded his way through, because that his character was, that was his thing, was dropping F-bombs. But it was fun once it's after 9:30.
Yeah, night. And that's when it starts, 9:25, isn't it?
9:25, yeah.
Oh, 9:25,
yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, 9:35. Yeah. It's late, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, the clue's in the name, but it is really late.
Yeah, but like, it should be a free-for-all what's getting discussed and what's being said then, you know? Oh, it should be in bed.
Absolutely. And if not, social services.
Whoa.
That took a swerve.
Yeah.
Right, we'll kick her off and get into it then, Terry.
Let's
do it.
Let's go.
Ryan, what we like to do with all our guests is we like to go back to the start. Yep. So can you tell us where you're from and what was life like growing up for you?
I came from a very easy enough background in Black Rock in Dublin. Went to school, two brothers, two sisters, mother and father. I was bookish, loved my books, quite nerdy, which comes as a surprise to no one. And played a bit of sport, retired from sport voluntarily at the age of 9. Just wasn't my bag. I mean, look at me, you know, let's face it. And I found my way in into other things. And a lot of it was to do with talking. I realized I loved talking. You know, I talked to the neighbors. We did a vox pop once on a little old cassette player with a cheapy microphone sticking out the side of it. I mean, it must have been about 9. Myself and my brother, and we went back to the folks. We met some really interesting people on the street. Did you? Yeah. We met some royalty. You met royalty on the street? What are you talking about? And there was this lady. She was very posh. And we said to her, what's your name? My name is Mrs. Murphy. And are you from here? Yes, I'm from here. And do you have any children? And she said, no. And this is where we thought we had met a baroness. And she said, no, I've no children. I'm baron. Oh, you're baron, which is a really old-fashioned word, obviously, to say I can't have children.
Yeah.
So we kind of ran home saying we met a baroness. Anyway, that was our first bit of dark humour on the vox pop at the age of 9. And I used to go and see a lot of movies. I was addicted to TV. I loved kids' TV. I loved cartoons. I loved off the beaten track stuff, like absurd kind of things. Like, my dad used to love Wile E. Coyote, you know, the Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of on a lot. And I loved breakfast TV and the news. Like, the news, I came from a lot of politicians in the family, so there was a lot of canvassing and literature and politics. And then remember the day Bobby Sands died. I remember the newspaper coming through the door going, Bobby Sands is dead. And I was only young. I must have been about 7 when I think of the sums, maybe 8. And yet I knew how important it was. I knew his name because he'd just been sitting there on the news for days, and day 66 days, wasn't it? So that was all in the mix. So it was always very journalistic, very inquisitive, very curious, very wordy. And yeah, so that's kind of what it was. I was sport evasive and chat inclined.
Oh, you've done my homework as well, Ron. And I read that you...
Well, be careful before you...
Hang him out, this really good. No.
Not yet. We put him on a spin cycle course. Yeah. Now, I read that you had a chat with your younger self in one of those interviews, and you said, you're going to be nerdy, but it's going to stand to you.
Yeah.
How does it stand to you then in your adult life?
Because I don't think I was like a lot of the other people coming through in media and so on. I had my own ways. I was called, somebody called me a young fogey, which is pretty good because it was true. I liked old fashioned stuff. I liked watching Inspector Morse. I liked the Beatles. I liked Sinatra, Dean Martin, Bobby Darin. I just loved the old world. So that stood to me. The fact that I loved history stood to me. And yeah, it just made, I was a little different to everyone else coming through the ranks in that sense. So, and I was always curious. I think that's the other thing. We were talking a little earlier on about how, you know, you always have something in your ear to listen to. And I'm a bit like that too. I just want to learn constantly. I find it hard to switch off because I want to know more. Even when I'm meeting friends after this for a few pints, I'm dying to catch up with them because we've got about 8 months of, come on. Like I have a couple of pals who I meet and we have the agenda. And we'll say in a WhatsApp, sticking on the agenda, and I'll see it. Do you know when you're meeting those pals where you go, I have a lot of friends who I call commas, because the commas are people you mightn't see for ages and ages, but you take up from where you just left off, full stops, beat it. You're never going to see them again anyway, so no love lost. But I love the commas because you just go, wow. Do you remember that thing we were talking about? Have you seen that? Like, have you seen the Louis Theroux program? Yeah. Have you seen this? Have you seen that? So all of that. I have a very broad interest pretty much in life. And I think that came from childhood.
So when did you say you were very journalistic and very nerdy and you like to talk and you're talking to everyone?
Yeah.
Was there a point in your life when you knew then you could make a living off doing these things?
Strangely, yeah. I was 12. Right. When I was 12 and I was going to a lot of films in the cinema with my dad. And we ran out of films to go to see. I think he was getting out of the house. But he said, write to the paper and complain about it. And he was my dad was a very low-key, quite introverted guy. I was surprised that he'd even suggest that. But he did. And I did. I wrote it. And it got published on the 20th of February 1986. I was 12. And it said, not enough films for 12-year-olds. And somebody from a kids' program, I mean, can you imagine how precocious that is? Well, I can. Somebody from a TV show called Anything Goes, was a kids' TV show at the time in RT, got in touch and said, do you want to review a couple of films first? Because you're obviously like a brat who writes to the papers. And I said, yeah. So we went to see two films, The Journey of Natty Can and The Adventures of Young Sherlock Holmes. I remember these details because they were so important to me. And I went in and I reviewed these on the TV and I went, yeah, this will do. I got 25 punts. And I thought, God, I'm being paid to go to the movies, eat popcorn, and come in and talk about them. And I thought, yeah, okay, I could get a handle on this. Then I was listening to kids on the radio, on a radio show called Poparama, which was on RT. And I wrote in, I said, can I do that? I read, I think I can talk, so I can review the books. So I did, I wrote in, and the producer sent me an envelope of books and said, put this on cassette and send it in and see how you do. And I reviewed them and sent it in. He said, okay, come on, you come in next week. So for about once a month on a Sunday morning, I'd go in with my dad and my brother Gar, and we'd go in. It was a real adventure going into RT. It was like going to Disneyland, to be honest with you. And I'd review the books from the age of about 12, 13, 14. Then the voice broke. All hell broke loose because suddenly I wasn't a cute kid. I was like, and then Roald Dahl. So I had to kind of change. So I kind of, the demand went dark for a little while. And then I went to university at UCD, studied there, and I can keep going, but...
Yeah, what did you study,
I studied history and Greek and Roman civilization, which sounds very highfalutin, but actually the joke was that you do that when you can't get into anything else.
Yeah.
But actually, I really enjoyed it.
Why didn't you go for journalism?
I thought if you can be a journalist... This is a great question, because at the age of 18, I thought, if you can be a journalist, the chances are you're going to be a journalist. This sounds strange. And I felt I want to learn more about history and the past and the world, whether it's ancient Rome or the Easter Rising and politics as well. I think that would serve me better rather than going in to learn how to be somebody who is curious. I felt journalism, you either have journalism in your bones or you don't.
Yeah.
I think it's quite hard to learn to be a journalist. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's a bit like politics, isn't it? Like you can go and study politics in college or exactly. University, but like that doesn't mean you're going to get elected. And then any Joe Soap can actually be elected.
But this is the problem with the school system. it's unfair to people who aren't naturally academic. Like, I call them the window gazers. I've interviewed so many window gazers, people who are artistic or business minded, who couldn't get a D in maths, Irish or English. But they looked out the window and they were dreaming and they were scheming and they were inventing and they were planning. And they, the school system isn't for them. So, yeah, I agree with you. You either, some things are innate to you. Mine is curiosity and chat. Some politicians are natural. Some of them you feel they're just spoofing. But I think there are real people who, I think some politicians are actually really good public servants. I think they care. But like any business like this, there's the real thing and there's the bullshit artists. So the punters decide.
Yeah, yeah, I think some industries are more saturated with them. That's a problem.
Yes.
So you went to college, obviously, studied.
Yeah.
What was your first gig then in interviewing? And
well, as in after college?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened there was I was thinking of studying law and I went into the King's Inns to study law for 1 week and I just said, get me out of here fast. It's not for me. The heads, the coursework, I just said no. And I got a gig as a runner in RT. And the runner, basically, for people who don't know, is you're delivering the post. Jerry Ryan was on. And I was his gopher, essentially. So I'd get him coffee and cakes and whatever he wanted. And then I was answering phones. And you were just really an office boy trying to soak it all up. I was just delighted to be in RT, just to see what it's like to work there. And I loved it. And I was constantly, from the get-go, I thought, I want to do this. I really want to go really high in here.
And what, you're learning a lot.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, I was watching like a hawk. Watching. I said, I used to see work experience people coming in playing solitaire for the week. And I just thought, that's not the point. You got to get in there and you got to make yourself, not indispensable, but you got to make yourself useful. You've got to be noticed. You got to have passion for the thing. Mm. Otherwise, get out. Like, don't be a drag.
Why are you doing it? Like?
Why are you doing it? Exactly. So I was passionate. I was interested. I was curious. I was hungry. I was hungry as hell. I really wanted to succeed. And so I watched it. And then some producer said, do you want to have a go at this? They had to pick up a microphone, do a report, do it. And I did. And I learned. And then I became a reporter. And I reported into this show, that show, eventually reported into Pat Kenny's radio show. And then eventually I got a show of my own on a Saturday morning. And then it all started to kick off.
Yeah.
It kicked off then. Radio train left the station then.
Yeah, sorry about that. Radio is one of them industries though where you can really climb the ranks, isn't it?
Like, if you're any good,
yeah,
you can. Yeah, I think you can, yeah. And if you've got to stand out a little bit. Remembering now, it feels like ancient history, but at the time, obviously there were no podcasts, so it was a smaller field. It wasn't as easy to stick out, but when you did, and when you succeeded, everyone knew you were there because there were so few stations to listen to. So that made it a bit easier, mm-hmm. as opposed to the shark-infested pool you guys are swimming in. Mm. I'm there too with you.
Yeah. But the good thing about it is you can go back and listen to this whenever you want. Radio's on live. It's very hard to catch up on it.
It is. It's increasingly easier now because of the players and that. There's also something beautiful about live radio that I love and have always loved. And same with TV. If I did the Late Late Show, every now and again, and it was rare, they'd say, can we record the country music show or something like that because if the artists couldn't be there. And it was just flat. It was fine. It was fun, but it was flat. Now, this isn't flat because we don't know each other and we don't know where this is going to go. And you're just back from one hell of a bloody operation. Yeah. And you probably want to go home and listen to your podcast. So there's an edge, right? But no, I'm joking. But live, this feels live now, right? But live brings something a little different. But you'll know that from the shows. When you do the shows, it's like it's a different energy, isn't it?
It's a different ball game.
I think there's more jeopardy. That's what it is.
Why? In what way?
As in, like, if it's not going well, like if this doesn't go well, we can kind of salvage something here. Let's steer the conversation this way.
Okay.
But if a live conversation's not going well, you can't just erase the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't totally that up.
By erase, I don't think you even mean actually erase it. I just mean...
you can't forget.
Sometimes, podcasts have went flat on us a couple of times with a guest.
Yeah.
Actually, many a times. And me and Calvin always say after, it's on us to then go, right, we need to pick her up here.
Yeah, you have to.
So there has been times when we've left and went, oh, we let that go flat. And then we'd say, that's on us.
With a bad interview. I got the ugly baby interview. And the ugly baby interview is, if you're walking down the street and you see someone you haven't seen for ages and they have a baby in the pram, the baby is a bit, right, a bit odd looking, like Winston Churchill with eczema or something, and you're going, Jesus, what do you say? And what you say is, this pram is beautiful. I love that. You can put your cup here and the wheel, the suspension. Wow. And the twinkle in the eyes and all that. So the same applies for the interview. So you've got the actor sitting there going, yeah, no, yeah, no. And you're going, the film is like, it's a turkey, right? But you've got live. So what you have to say, you go, the cinematography.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And the way the credits were, and the way the soundtrack. You know, I never saw Venice like that before. You know? So it's the ugly baby. You've done them. Yeah. You've done them. Where you talk about everything but the bloody thing itself. Yeah. It's the nature of it. You know, it's nature.
You know what's funny as well, Terry? I'd love for you to go into one room and I go into another room and someone to ask us the same set of questions about like previous podcasts and see if we come up with the
Mr.
same.
Mr. and Mrs.
I'd reckon to be 90%.
Yeah, I reckon.
If you get 10 questions, we're answering none.
Sorry, lads. That's a Christmas special idea for the lads. It's a great idea.
PBX. You have to put that behind the paywall. That goes behind the paywall.
Completely. That is paywall only. Not since the Berlin Wall has something so difficult to climb being put up in Irish in society.
It's only €4
No, no, listen, you don't know what's to me, lads.
The party at the entry is low,
it is low. Good value.
You got your Saturday morning show then, you said, yeah?
And then what happened was a fella, really good egg, who was the man who brought us all reeling in the ears, John O'Regan. And he said, do you want to do a quiz show? And very few people, it didn't last long only because we had to go off and do something else. But we did one called All Kinds of Everything. It was great fun. I used to love quiz shows as a kid, love Blockbusters and all these kind of, Only Connect, which I love now, and you know, all these kind of things. I love quizzes. And we did that, and a producer came in and he saw me doing it and said, okay, you need to be doing TV because you can work a room, you can work an audience. So will you present The Rose of Tralee? So I did that for 2 years. And then somebody saw that and went, do you know what you should do? Do a chat show. So I did a thing called Tubridy Tonight for 5 years. And I've been watching chat shows all my life, like in the mornings when I was sick, you know, when you were sick and you could watch morning TV, and I used to love that. And I used to, and then there was a show called The Price is Right. Leslie Crowther, The Price is Right. And he'd come down these stairs, and I thought, I love that bounce down the stairs. I'd love to bounce down the stairs to an audience. Why? I have no idea. Again, it comes back to what I said earlier on. I think it's the need.
Yeah.
I mean, I have an ego, and I have a need for attention. You know, I think anyone who sits in front of a microphone has that need. The question is, can you keep the attention, and are you entertaining enough to deserve a place behind a microphone? Yeah. If not, get behind the bank and be a teller. You know, don't be here. So, but I just had this feeling this was all really interesting. And then I was watching Michael Parkinson, and you see Gabe Byrne and all these great interviewers. And I was saying, oh, I'd love to meet all these famous people and ask them questions about themselves. And so it felt right. So I did Tubridy Tonight. And we had a great time. And then the Late Late Show, Pat Kenny left the Late Late Show. And I remember watching it that night because my phone went, you're up next. And I was on, I said, no, I'm not, I'm too young.
How old were you at the time?
I was about 31, 32.
31, yeah.
I think it was about that. No use of numbers. long story that. But we get there too, no doubt. But anyway, I was sitting there, you know, you might as well beat them to the punch. Yeah. But I was sitting there going, okay.
Oh, very good, right?
Here we go. And I was sitting there, Pat's gone, what'll I do? And they were saying, you're up next. So there were a few runners and riders for the job of the Late Late Show, right?
Who was in the run and which run?
It was Miriam McCallaghan, Jerry Ryan, me. There was talk of Patrick Healty at the time as well. His name was mentioned. I think they liked the idea of one PK following another.
Yeah.
And they were all the names in the mix. And I think everyone, certainly some of them were called in for discussions. And by discussion, I mean one conversation, which was, why do you think you should present the Late Late Show? And I said, it's the town square and you're the mayor and you're just bringing everyone together to say, how was the week? And it's Ireland. And at the time it was. I mean, I think it's different now because the nature of television has changed. But that was at the time. And I was having a coffee with my youngest daughter, and my phone went and said, it's the director general wants you to come in and see him immediately. So I said to my youngest, I said, look, I'm going to have to, and it was killing me to say goodbye to her for 10 minutes, but I said, I have to go, but it could be good news. So I said, hold your horses in. Got back into RT, got into this room, and the director general and the head of TV were there, and they said, well, I presume they were just saying, listen, thanks a million. We're going to give the job to somebody else and they're going to be great. And I would have said, absolutely. I was really happy where I was. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't expecting it. And he said, you got the job. Congratulations. You're it. And I said, holy smoke, like what? I had to be corralled into another room because no one was allowed. No, I was allowed to call my parents. And I remember calling my mom. I was really proud. And I said, Mom, you're talking to the next presenter of the Late Late Show. And she said, guy, who is it? And I said, I was trying to be, anyway, it's me, I got the gig.
But tell us, why is that feeling actually like?
It's like, I think it's probably the nearest thing to getting a green jersey to play for.
That's it, like, that's
soccer,
that's
for Ireland. It's the pinnacle.
Doesn't
for,
any higher.
It really doesn't. I mean, it's like being, to me, it was like becoming president or Taoiseach or captain of Ireland's rugby team or soccer team. Or,
but in your world, that in my world, that's everything you want.
It was the dream. Yeah. And I'm not going to, for 1 minute, diminish that by saying it didn't feel as good as you guys. I can see it in you. You're looking, like, oh, was it like that amazing? It really was.
Yeah.
And I was imagining, I was like kind of pretty much the age you guys are now.
Yeah.
Which is, at your age, you feel, yeah, I think I've done everything and, you know, and I'm fully rounded and all that kind of thing. As I did then, I'm kind of, if I'm being really honest with you, and I'm going to be, I kind of wish it was a bit, I wish I got it 5 years after, a little bit. I think I needed a bit more experience of life under my belt.
So life experience and not industry experience. No,
life.
Yeah.
Life. Yeah, I needed a bit more life experience. I was a bit wet behind the ears. And I was happy doing Tubridy Tonight. There was nothing wrong with it. It was the kind of cheeky younger brother of the Late Late Show, and I was enjoying that role. And then once you got the Late Late, you had to put on dad's suit.
Yeah.
And you had to be,
good evening. Boy. Yeah, you're a
you know,
boy
it was growing up television, senior hurling. You know what I mean? You were messing around on Sundays in the afternoon and the dodgy pitch, but now you're Croke Park. And that was fine, but it was a lot of responsibility. And I'm not very responsible. I had a bit more giddiness left in me before I got to full adulthood in TV terms.
Yeah.
So that would be my only, it's not a regret because regrets are a waste of time. But I've thought about this, and I was thinking about this coming in to you guys today. I say, what would you say that was different, you know, even in an interview? Because I'm much more free to speak now in the last few years. It's really nice. And that's why I love podcasts too.
Yeah.
I can chat to you guys about stuff like this. So that would be my only observation. What do you think of that?
Would that have been coming from somewhere, somebody telling you that, like, oh, you need to be...
No,
just you are setting yourself to that standard, mate.
No, it's just myself. I've my own standards when it comes to like TV and radio stuff. Like, if ever we did a show and somebody said that was fine, I said...
Yeah.
We are better than fine. Mm. Yeah, you must feel the same way after a show like this. You just got to, we're better than fine. Fine is fine for others.
Yeah. The bar's higher than fine.
Come on.
Yeah.
It
needs to be better. Yeah.
Got to be better. And if it's not, fix it.
Yeah.
That's why I always surround, my grandfather used to say, always surround yourself with people who are smarter than you.
Yeah.
And I used to do that all the time.
Like, oh, definitely. If you walk into the room, you're the smartest person in the room, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know this.
Yeah.
And if you think you are, you're a fool.
Yeah.
But if you know you are, you're such a fool that you don't know, so you can't think it. So you're gonna crock it anyway. Yeah. So you just have to admit that person's better than me. Like when I was at school, pretty much bar English and just about history, I got a C in everything. A C was my grade. Everything apart from Irish and maths, I got a D in Irish pass maths. And most people would look at me and go, "Oh, you probably got 12 A's." But far from it. I was a C student. And that's why when I was in TV, right, I needed smarter people, quite literally. Yeah. So, yeah, that worked for me.
You said that you need more life experience, Ryan, but I imagine so. You would have been a father then, you would have had a house, you would have been well rounded. But, like, what more experience did you need?
I hadn't travelled very, very much or very far. And I just don't, to be honest with you, I just don't think I'd seen enough of, when I say the world, I mean even Ireland. Society. I was in a bit of a bubble. Like when you think of it, I was, you know, class wise, I was a bit trapped in, self-imposed, trapped in the same place, same school, same college, same work. It's almost like a bubble.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd kind of got out a bit more, explored a bit more, you know, investigated a bit more of life, of Ireland, of society, which I did eventually.
Yeah.
And that helped immensely. By the time I was about a few years into the Late Late and I settled in and I realized, gosh, okay, I've got this. I really do. And then I think it really hit by the time we got to COVID, where you were presenting the show on your own with no audience. You had to feel like you knew Ireland really well because they were so sad. We were all so sad. The country was sad and upset and lonely and frightened and terrified and pissed off and scared. And you had to try and figure that out and say on a Friday night, you know, look, particularly the older people, they couldn't go out, so they were looking at the TV and you felt this responsibility to say, you'll be all right. You know, even if you didn't know if you'll be all right, you just had this responsibility. I couldn't have done that in my early days because I was too young to be saying you'll be grand. By the time I was a bit older, then you're in your mid-40s, then you can have a little bit more authority. But yeah, that's what I mean by that.
So seeing when you get the gig, is there like a, not a protocol, but like, do they take it off and be like, right, we're going to mould you need to do this training and you need to be doing this and this is how you have to dress? Or
starting Friday.
Is that it? And so you, in a way, that's actually better because this is you, this is your image, this is how you're, this is the Ryan Tubridy twist on the Late Late Show.
Yeah,
that's, and it shows that they wanted Ryan Tubridy and not just you, but then, no, you have to act this way and you have to do this thing. Yeah. They know who you are, they want you to be that person.
I couldn't really be myself completely. Because there'd be expectations. It is the Late Late Show. It has a vibe. There are expectations from the audience. You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do that. There are bits of that. They're almost unspoken, actually.
Yeah.
Because you just have to accept that the audience want a certain thing, if you like. So there are certain rules like that. But by virtue of just being myself, like, that's all I could give. I didn't have versions of me. And it worked. I mean, a lot of chat shows when I was there came and went on Saturdays, but the Late Late Show stayed, and I stayed until I chose to leave because it did start to, I was exhausted by the end of it. It was getting a little repetitive in my mind for the week in, week out. And it was the day before my 50th birthday, the last show. And I said, if I can finish this before I'm 50, that'll be really sweet. So I could maybe start a new chapter. And that's what happened.
So your fourth show,
First Late Late Show,
sorry, is with Brian Cowan.
Was it Brian Cowan on the first one?
Yeah. So you're interviewing the Taoiseach.
Yeah, that was pretty big.
During the economic crisis.
Yeah.
When you come out of that first show, do you realise the stature and the magnitude of the Late Late Show? Is it bigger or less than what you knew? Because as you said, it is an institution. It's the biggest thing in Irish society. Like, it literally is a pillar in Irish culture, the Late Late Show. Is it everything you thought it was going to be? Is it higher or lower?
Bigger.
It's bigger.
It's bigger. Yeah, it felt bigger. I think the next day we went to Electric Picnic. Why is that funny?
It was needed.
Yeah, you just have a great life. It's like Late Late Show, Force One.
Brian Cowan, Voice the Country in Bits. Who's on the main stage?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys might have been. I think I went to kind of go to let off some steam. So what happened, Brian? Yeah, it was big because all the papers covered. I realised when it was front page, like, then once you present the Late Late Show, you become pretty well known. There's no denying it. Yeah. Like, that is weird. Everyone knows. And then you do the toy show, right?
Yeah, that's
and all
it.
The kids know.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing being, say, Bono, where everyone over 40 knows you. But when you do the toy show, everyone under 10 knows you.
Yeah.
So you can be walking through Smith's as I used to be when the girls were young. And you'd see this, like the dad and his kid. And the kid be looking up going, the toy man. Right, the dad's busy worrying about something over there, and then she tugged the elbow. I look over my shoulder and she tugged the elbow and go, I saw the toy man. He goes, yeah, of course you did.
Yeah.
And it was like she's not lying. You become very, very recognised, and then that's it, it's over. Privacy dead. Privacy RIP. You go out the door, you're on, and then the phones happen, and then you're fully RIP. And the only thing, when I say RIP, I just mean privacy RIP. That's fine, I knew what I was going into, and it changed my life. Yeah.
But did you actually know the scale of what you're going into? Because I can imagine you couldn't go anywhere. Like, that's a shock to the system. I don't think a lot of people actually understand how big of a shock to the system that can be. Like, I don't think anyone actually expects to get to a position where you literally can't go anywhere in the country you are born without being recognised.
No, you can't. And there was a time when I would have said, that sounds really arrogant. But it's a matter of fact in Ireland.
Late Late Show
but
host.
But I explain it to, I explain it to people from abroad who are going, like, who are you? You know, and I'm, you know, and it is funny when you'd see a table in London, for example, and two people at a table of 10 will go, jeez, it's Tubridy. Like, or how are you, Tubbs? And the other eight are going, who's that guy? You know, and they're going, no, in Ireland he's, and you have to get into this whole rigmarole of explaining it. Whereas at home, there's no explanation required. They can say, you know, I love him or I hate him. That's who he is. And that's what that is. But I'm sure you're getting a taste of it yourselves. You know, when people stop you and say, can I have a selfie, or, you know, say hello, whatever. But
yeah, but not to that level though.
No, but what I will say, and this is really important to me, I actually love meeting people.
Yeah.
And now that sounds like, I love people. Aren't you great? No, people stop, can I have a selfie? Yeah, I really enjoy, I walked up from the train station to you guys today and the smiles and the just the lovely waves and the recognition. It is really, really nice. Yeah. So I think that comes back to what I was saying about like politics. And I think I have quite a political, you pointed that out, just so you could go into politics. I have a political gene because I've got loads of politics in my family. On both sides, right? Grandparents in the War of Independence and everything. So that's coming through my blood system, if you like. And I think part of that means that you don't mind people. In fact, you quite like them. It's a kind of an oxygen for me. I love, like when you guys walked out into the Bord Gáis or the National Stadium, whatever, as I'm going to do in Dún Laoghaire and then into beyond around the country, that's quite a nice feeling to meet people who are, you know, buying a ticket to come to see you, to have a show. It feels good.
Mm.
It's the best.
And what class of idiot walks away from somebody who says, can I have a picture with you? Like, what?
Chapel Roan.
Chapel Roan. She's in a bit of bother this week. I mean, little did she know who she said no to. But it shouldn't matter who she said no to.
You shouldn't be.
That's the point. Yeah. And actually, I hear about some head the balls in, let's call it our industry, who are notorious for not stopping to say hello. And it comes, I'm hearing back going, they say, oh yeah, thanks for the picture. Your man or your one met her in such and such and met your man in so and so, wouldn't say hello, wouldn't stop to say. And you know, it'll follow you around. Yeah. You know, so if you don't like it, you're in the wrong
business.
It's
a strange one, but I think as well, we're obviously on a lot smaller scale than you. But
for now.
But we were in it. It was happening to us at times when we were actually still going on nights out all the time, or at every event, at a boxing event, and you can see as the night is going on longer, people are getting drunk or end up pulling out. There was nights like that where I was like, this is actually a bit crazy.
Okay, that's what I call that, the karaoke factor. So what happens is, you're on the night out, happens in when I go to the pub, it's going fine, no one wants to get up and sing, it's quiet, you get the odd head wants to do I Will Survive, and they're up there, and then you have Dancing Queen over there, and that's fine. And then can I have a picture one? And then at 10 o'clock, vroomp, the queue forms, you are my toy show, you are Christmas. And at that point you're going, should we go back to, you say to my brother or whatever, we go back to your place and have a few, you know, I love a bag of cans, so can we have the bag of cans? Yeah, bag of cans, great. So we have a few pints, and then about 10:30 we'll say, let's do the old privacy bit, because it's just with your friends, they're going, right,
yeah,
how long are we doing this?
Yeah, it's time and place.
Yeah. But again, I don't mind. We do sit in the far corner, to be honest with you. We have a little spot in O'Donoghue's where we just go. They put my back to the wall and we just get stuck in, and then they find you. And then the karaoke thing, then everyone wants to sing. You know what I mean? By the end of it, even me, I'm like, come on, let's do more photos.
Yeah.
So, I like it. I don't mind it.
Right, how much creative control does the Late Late Show host actually have?
I'd say, well, I try putting a percentage on it.
Yeah please.
I'd say, okay, well, first of all, I'm going to just say one thing. It depends on the host. I know Gay would have had it probably about
99.
Yeah. But Gay didn't. Gay lived in RT. I mean, he had a sleeping bag there.
Like, he gave a sleeping bag. He stayed that long, he didn't give him a bed.
Yeah. He had a sleeping bag for the afternoon. Like, mad stuff. I would never give myself to any organisation, you know, for that much. But that's why he's Gay Bar. Okay, so fair play. Pat, I'd say, had a fair whack of control, in fairness to him. But again, I was never on the show, so I don't know. I would never worked with him in that regard. I'd say I had about, not much, I'd say 30-40%, whereby I loved the music. So I'd be saying, can we get Abu Coulibaly on, or can we, you know, whoever, can we get Maliki on, or whoever it might be. I'd be kind of keeping an eye out because I had young people, you know, my daughters, and they'd be saying, have you heard this? Like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So music for sure. I felt, back to that thing about employing people who are smarter, I didn't employ anyone. I worked with people smarter than me, and I felt that they knew what they were doing. Now and again, I'd have to say, lads, I've had that person on before, they're terrible, or can we have this person on? So yeah, about 30-40%. It's probably a fair shout, and that's okay. I think that producer's job is to produce, and you know, I think if you try to do too much, you become a pain in the arse.
Yeah, I just think it's because, like, you're the face of it. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, so you do. That's why you do
have a lot of responsibility on you.
That's a really astute point, and that's why you have to have quality control. So let's call it quality control rather than trying to be a producer. So you just go, lads, I'm not sure about that one. Do you mind not? Or, you know, at the moment I'm working on a show on Times Radio, and it's a Sunday show, but it loads on in 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon. And I'd be reading something about, say, Joe Nesbo or whatever. I said, love to get him on. The next thing you know, they go, yeah, he's on. What? This is great. So yeah, it that's really interesting. Now, I'm listening to stuff all the time now with this particular show, and I'll go, oh, that's a great idea for a program, or that's a great book, and you know, and all that kind of thing. So funny enough, that's very creative controls, and the Bookshelf podcast is also a lot of that's coming from me, but also of a small team of people who are interested in it and who are extremely helpful. So yeah, I like being a part of it, but I'm not a control freak.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think
it's like quality.
Yeah, but I think the more percentage control you have, the better the show is going to be.
Not if you're a terrible producer.
Well, that's true as well, but I think the more interested you are in the person that...
That's fair. You're more invested in that sense. Yeah.
Like, I would hate to be sitting here and like not even really knowing who the guest is every week and kind of going, oh, hope the producer does a good job there with this guest because we don't know, and then...
That's why it's 30%. So your 30% is checking with the producer. They're saying, how about this person? And you say, please don't do this to me. You know,
yeah.
Life's too short. I know this person, they're terrible.
Yeah.
Can you imagine then, like, on a Saturday morning and all the papers are saying, oh, this person was on the Late Late Show, and Ryan Tubby asked him this, that was a bit out of line, he shouldn't have said that. And
you're like, a lot. Like,
yeah, that's what I mean. But now that falls back on you, and you may not have been 100% behind that decision.
Yeah, but I stand over. Like, I would never hang anyone out to dry. I would never hang out, you know, say, oh, I didn't, that wasn't my name's over the door. Mm. I have to take the credit for the good stuff and the slaps for the bad stuff. And it's a weak person who doesn't do that. Like, it's a real louser who says, oh, I didn't book this. You know, that's not nice. I mean, imagine if you point the finger and say, it wasn't me. You know, you've got to take ownership.
You can take full credit for the good and the bad if you're in more control.
That's it. Like, you can't just suddenly turn around after the toy show and say, now that bit was mine.
Yeah. yeah.
That dodgy interview over there. Yeah. That was his. So, you know, take it, give it. You know, what happened with the Late Late, the online stuff went a bit mad. I was on Twitter for ages and ages. And then one day I was on Twitter. And my daughter, she must have been one of my eldest, and about 10, or she goes, are you on the phone again? And I went,
yeah.
And I went straight into my apps or whatever it was and delete.
Yeah.
If your daughter is asking you, are you on your phone again? You're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I have to lead by example. I said, I'm gone. It's gone. I don't know how many followers, but there were quite a heap. And the people in work were saying, that was a lot of people that you just dismissed. And I said, well, I only have an audience of one. I'm interested in. And the others can find somebody else to tweet about. So that was great in the sense that it was a great realization. Now I'm on Instagram. I love it. The girls are now 27 and 21. So are you on their phone again? Yeah, so are you. So it doesn't matter as much, but it's also a much nicer place to be. I think Twitter's like, I'm not even going to bother talking about Twitter. I couldn't care. I actually am bored stiff talking about Twitter and X, and it's so boring. If you don't mind.
Let's.
You brought it up.
I did. And I'm shutting myself down.
Why'd you snap our nose, right?
I'm just going to say, no, that was your fault. 30%. Just a little more.
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. Go down, go
down, go down. Come up, come up, come up. What guest on The Late Late were you most nervous to interview?
I was pretty nervous interviewing Hillary Clinton, because she just lost an election to Donald Trump, and she had written a book called What Happened. That's on her. There's no doubt about that. But regardless of your politics, I went to see her, to interview her actually in New York, and we set up the cameras there. And I've been following her all since Bill got elected. I was fascinated by the American politics, still am, but the Clintons really were interesting because they were such a saga, like such drama. But also, he was an excellent politician. I mean, we can talk about his peccadilloes as well, but as a politician, my goodness, you know, like fair play. But onwards to Hillary. So Hillary's sitting down, she's getting her microphone done, and I'm saying to her, you've got a lovely group of people around you, nice team. And she goes, yes. I said, it reminds me of that book, The Boys in the Boat, you know, where the oars go down. And she goes, have you read that book? I said, yeah. Oh, my husband and myself, that's our favourite book at the moment. All right. And what happened was then all the barriers came down and we started talking about books. And I said, who do you like to read when you're just chilling out? You know, if you're Secretary of State, what do you do to stop going mad? And we had a great conversation. And it went on, and then her people were wrapping all up, and she said, no, no wrapping. I'm enjoying this one, so keep going. And I walked away from that interview, and I thought, wow, if they had let her run for office, that version of her, funny, warm, interesting, smart, pleasant, you know, nice grandmother, mother, whatever you want to call her, she would have won. But they ran this awful, cold, mannish version.
Kind of warmonger.
Yeah, and just, tough.
Yeah.
But actually just let her, there's a great line in West Wing, the President Bartlett, let Bartlett be Bartlett. And sometimes you should just let the person be themselves rather than try and construct. So she, I would say nervous, I was nervous going to see her because she was a big historic figure as far as I'm concerned. But it was a really interesting, I was fascinated to meet her, really was. It always stands out. Herself and Buble. Buble's great crack. I mean, Buble's lovely.
It's a contrast. Hillary Clinton and Buble.
Doesn't strike me as someone you'd be nervous around.
Welcome to the Late Late Show. That's what it was. It's all about contrast. And then here's Catherine Corliss from the Chewing Babies. You know, and you're going, like, if you ask me who do I admire in Ireland, Catherine Corliss would be one of the most admirable people I've ever met.
Yeah.
Former President Mary McAleese, one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. I mean, Vicky Phelan.
Yeah.
The late Vicky Phelan. I find it very hard to even say that now. Extraordinary person. All trailblazing, strong, interesting, you know, no bullshit people who just refused to say no. I love people like that too. That was the beauty of the show, that you could have Catherine Corliss and Vicky Phelan and Michael Bublé and Christy Dignam. Another legend. Yeah. Can I tell you a quick Christy story?
Of course
you can. He's told us a lot of them himself.
You know.
He's great with the story.
Well, he doesn't stop. Which is a great guest though.
Yeah.
I was in his house. It was the last interview he ever gave, and it was for the radio. And I was in his house, and I hadn't seen him for a while. He actually didn't look that sick when I got into the house. And he takes out 20 Silkworth Red, which I thought, he starts smoking. I said, she might as well. Like, at this stage, you know, like, what's the, you know, that was his point. Anyway, we were chatting away, and I said, how are you feeling? I mean, it's really simple questions. You know, when a simple question is profound at the same time, because it was life and death. He was going to be dead in a matter of weeks. And we were in Finglas in his house in this lovely estate. He had birds, you know, he collected birds. Yeah. You know all this. And out the front window, there was a guy walking past, and he was heading for the bus, just walking along. And Christy said, he looked out the window and he said, you see that fella there? I said, yep. I was expecting him to tell me who he was or where he was off to. He said, that fella has no idea how lucky he is to be just walking, to just walk to the bus. He's got his legs, he's got his coat on, he's just alive. He said, if only he knew. And I just thought,
yeah, that gave me a shiver there, I mean, yeah.
It still does to me, because I'm thinking, what, the arrogance of health? I mean, who am I talking to? You're just back after your massive operation, and you go, like, you'll see things differently now.
Oh, you already do.
I bet you do. And and you know,
that's like, what the operation was for.
Seeing colour.
Well, yeah, tell you what, I hope you're not looking for sympathy.
I'm over it now.
Flowers and grapes coming down. Yeah, you're done with that. Yeah.
The last 3 weeks, everyone's like, you're a fella, alright? I was like, he's grand.
Yeah, nothing wrong with him.
Tell the story when we got asked to do a gig.
Well, we got asked to be somewhere, and I kind of didn't want to be there, and I was like, how the fuck am I going to grab this? And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it without Terrence, because you're asking us to be there, not me to be there.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's no problem. And how is he? I was like, yeah, like, it'll be a few weeks before he's grand. Flick onto Instagram, he's at the run of 10k.
He's telling someone I'm really not well.
Oh, that's so
funny. He's at the run of 10k. I was like, you couldn't have just waited till tomorrow. You know what I mean? So I know something for him.
Koga, how unwell is he? He normally does a 20.
He's usually doing half, aren't he?
Oh gosh.
Yeah, so the scar is fake then, is it?
That's
attention. Publicity. That's a serious cry for help.
It's done as well. Do you know what I mean? The it's big build up to him coming back.
So it's just the whole thing is a scar.
Yeah, it's just basic. For content.
Put all of this out, Siobhan. Edit all this part out.
Instead
of pulling down the mask.
Siobhan, I'll be listening.
Roy.
Yeah.
Calvin, go.
Have any other memorable guests that stick out to you?
I thought we were going somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to go somewhere else?
No, I kind of want to get to the other guests because, like, you're going through meeting Hillary Clinton, but then having this intimate moment with Christie and his gaff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is there any more like that stick out to you?
I got on very well with Russell Crowe, if you'd like me to talk about that. He's a real gentle giant.
Yeah.
And what happened with him was, he was on the show and we kind of got on with each other. I'm not quite sure, because he's like Gladiator and I'm a bowling skittle. Like, so I don't know what, like, we shouldn't have got on. Really, But you know, Russell, he comes in. He's, and we were told like, don't look him in the eye. And all
kind of what are you talking?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But actually, he wasn't like that. It was just some heads around. Yeah, he was like, nice to meet you. Anyway, we said we're going for a pint after the show down in Balls Bridge if you want to join us, because the green room's fine, but now and again you just wanted a proper pint. And he said, yeah, I'll come along. And for some reason, I mentioned earlier on I studied history, and in the course of the history, I did Australian history, which is a short course, but in it, there was a Prime Minister of Australia called Gough Whitlam, right? And he was really good to the Aboriginals, and I thought, fair play to him. I just liked what he did. I liked the cut of his jib. And like I wrote to the paper, I wrote to him, right? And I was in college, I was 18, an Irish fellow writing to this really old, retired politician. Dear Mr. Whitlam, loved what you did with that. And anyway, he wrote back this lovely letter with some policy documents about the Aboriginal, whatever. But fast forward, now I'm presenting the Late Late Show. I'm in a pub with Russell Crowe. We're having a pint. He's being polite, chatting away. And I said, you know, I wrote to Gough Whitlam once. You wrote to Gough Whitlam? I said, yeah. Why? I said, because of the word. He said, we need to sit down. So we sat down and we immediately became friends over politics. And we went through all the prime ministers. And he was going, what tequila do they have here? I said, it's Mary Max. I'm sure it's not going to be, like, I don't know, but we'll try and find you a decent one. But don't count me in, because I love pints, but I can't drink. Do you know, I'm one of those people, like, I'm like, yeah, I got to go home now. You know, it's terrible. I've only, you know, I can do 4 or 5 and then I'm like, I've run out of juice, you know. So even though I want to be there for like 8, but I can't. And as I get older, it's getting worse. So we were sitting there and my producer, the team, we always got on really well. Like, we were good pals. And they could see me struggling, you know, getting into the third or fourth. Because that's all after the show. I've just done 2 hours and a radio show that morning. So I was kind of getting a bit, and Russell was getting really into it. And the tequila was slamming and I was avoiding the tequila. And what they did was, I'd be halfway through a pint and I'd see a hand come over my shoulder and they'd take the pint away and put a fresh one. So it looked like I was going pint for pint, but actually I was only having halves really to keep the conversation going. Anyway, turns out he came over to film some years later, The Pope's Exorcist.
Yeah.
And he was staying in a really big house with the tennis court. And I met him on the street and he said, do you play tennis? I said, well, I do now.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't played since I was a kid, but I got out a racket and for 8 Sundays in a row, I played tennis with Russell and his girlfriend and a couple of others. And we became friends and we're still in touch. And that was a bizarre offshoot of the whole Late Late thing.
Class.
Yeah, it is. It is. We did play the first time we played tennis. I'll just say very quickly, Russell's a big guy. I'm not. And I hadn't played for a long time. And he goes, Ryan, you know, are you ready? And I say, yeah. And he was across and the ball just went up and the hand came up to, and I was suddenly looking at him and suddenly heard the music from Gladiator. I went, Jesus, I've got Maximus looking across. He's about to whack a ball in my head. And he goes, are you ready? I said, yeah, no. And it just went, boom. Yeah, that's an ace.
It's one of their moments.
One of those moments. Yeah. And I did find myself saying that, how am I playing tennis with this fella?
Yeah.
You know, so there are lots of those times. And you know, I, since I've left the Late Late Show and since I've left RT broadly, I do find myself looking back at what a blast it was. And like, even going up to the Oars to interview the various presidents, and you know, I've interviewed so many of them and all the Taoiseach, and I really enjoyed that. And the kids in the toy show who are now, you'll get a 6'2" giant coming up to you in the pub saying, remember me? What? Remember me? No, I'm Tony.
Tony who?
The kid with the dinosaur. Ah, Jesus, Tony, you were like 1 foot off the ground back in the day. I wasn't going to recognise you now. Yeah, but I thought you'd recognise me. I can't. Last time I was looking down at you like that with your dinosaur and now you're Tony.
Yeah.
That happens a lot, but I love that. I love all that. You have me daydreaming about it. Now I really quite enjoy going back.
You're looking back fondly now.
In the moment, yeah.
Say that again.
When you're in the moment, you never took it in.
Yeah.
That is a good point. And you know, you become a lot more philosophical with a bit of age as well. Like, I'm much more relaxed. If I did this interview with you 5 years ago, I think you'd get the guy that you probably were expecting. You know, there's an expectation when people meet you and some people go, like, you do get the odd time. Jeez, you're not as big as a knob as I thought you were going to be, you know. Oh, thank you. I think that's
compliment.
It's a compliment. Yeah. Thanks. You know, and then of course it works both ways too. But but you do get to thinking about it, and it was a great privilege. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a word I don't like to use too much, but it was.
Culturally, Ryan, were you sitting there behind that desk thinking how big, like, some moments are? Because we all know, like, there's iconic Late Late Show moments. So, like, you know, when a guest is sitting there and they're talking, and it usually is political, were you looking at that being like, this is going to be fucking huge.
If I did that, I don't think I'd enjoy the interview, and I had to enjoy the interview. You know, if you get giddy going, oh, they've just said that, you'd lose the run yourself. And so I, not really. I think what would happen is, I think if David Ryan and Mark Ryan, two brothers who were abused in school in Blacker College, one had been a student on it and one had been abused on the grounds, and they came on the show, you talk about being nervous. Imagine the guts it takes to come on and talk about that. And it was so sad because I could see two boys who were older men who just weren't given a chance to grow up properly. And that is the story of a lot of men and women around the place. And you just go, what monsters did this to these guys? And it's going on. And for them to come on, and I'm sorry for being serious about it, but it's important because it just answers a question. And what I always thought when somebody came on and told that story, and you know, if it happened too with women who were abused by their fathers, where every now and again you'd have these awful court cases and they'd come on. And I would always say to them before in the green room, there are people watching the show tonight who are going to go to bed and are going to be attacked, or who might have been attacked this morning. And by what you're saying, you're going to shame them into stopping or encourage somebody beside them to say, stop. I said, but you coming on here is not entertainment. You coming on here is important because you could actually stop this horror for somebody else. And since that interview, which was not that long ago, one of those brothers is dead, passed away. And the other, David, I actually met for lunch recently because we kept a little bit in touch, and he's getting on with his life. So we can have the crack about the Bublés and all that, but the importance of the show and the people that were on it were, when people like that probably changed lives. And that gives me pause for thought, because that's important. That stops being TV. That is life and death.
Mm.
And that's because of those people. So, yeah.
And then if I was to flip that question,
yeah,
you ever think about the weight of the stuff that you do be saying? Like, is you at a radio show as well, not just the Late Late Show? Are you ever behind the mic being like, I need to watch on how I put this point across, or the sentiment that I'm actually trying to get across here?
Yeah, and you know, I've no doubt I made mistakes. When you're doing that much live, we talked about live earlier, when you're doing that much live radio and certainly live TV, I mean, you know, there was no editing. You know, you kind of go, shit, I wish I hadn't said that. You did. But I don't, I'm not sure if I was consistently wrong or bad in things I said. But yeah, you have to be mindful of what you say.
Mm.
I think people understand the intention as well sometimes. So it's hard to really fuck something up if you're trying to make a point if the intention is there, if you have the right intention.
I did the assembly recently, and the neurodiverse, about 30 people ask you all these questions. There's an older guy got up and he said, you know, some years ago you said Greta Thunberg should be at home with her dad. And the next day you doubled down and said she should be having a hot chocolate and watching a movie or something like that. Do you regret that? And I said, yeah. I said straight up I did. At the time, I was trying to be paternal.
Mm.
I meant it. But it came across as patronising.
Yeah.
And I couldn't win that argument.
Yeah.
Mm.
I wasn't trying to be a bad guy, but it was picked up the wrong way.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's probably hundreds of examples of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you just, it's and then people choose to have a go as well. So
Yeah.
So, we're at the being chatting there, Ryan. It seems like we're all dancing around the situation that kind of happened.
Yeah.
There was a scandal.
Yeah.
A scandal, yeah, we'll call it that.
Yeah.
Where you received payments of over 300 grand. In and around that anyways. Tell me how you found out that there's going to be a scandal and what that moment was like.
I got a phone call to say that there was going to be an issue and there was a problem. And sure enough, it all kicked off then. And there was some mad report which published my name 18 times to say that this guy did this, that and the other. And look, at this stage, we know the deal. I myself and RTE kind of disagree on how that worked out. Director General says RTE deserved to accept 90% of the scandal, which to me seems about right. And I have to accept my part in it. And that's what it is. And that's what it was.
If RTE are willing to accept 90% of the scandal, what's the 10% that you accept?
Well, I should have said when they released the numbers and the figures of the salary, I should have spoken up louder than I did and said, hang on, there's a problem here. But I didn't. And then the money that you're talking about, I gave back the 150 because when I was at the Oireachtas, which I appeared at for 7 hours on the trot, because I had nothing to hide and I was happy to go in and tell everyone. I mean, at the end of the Oireachtas hearings, one of the TDs said, oh, we'll cut it short because, you know, it's getting late. And I said, please do not cut this short. You know, I said, I'm here till the last dog barks. I have nothing, just ask everything. So as part of that, they said, okay, well, you know, you're paid 150,000 euro, which is an enormous amount of money, in advance of doing some gigs for the Renault company. I said, yeah. And they said, will you pay that back if you don't do those gigs? I said, of course, if I don't. And that's why that went back. Mm. And then there's other bits and pieces that are quite technical. There was a waiving of a large sum of money in the middle of all those things for about 120,000, which I refused to take. But a lot of that didn't get covered because I think it didn't make for great news. So that's what happened. And it was a difficult time in my life because, as you've been hearing, how fondly I look back on my time there. I loved every bit of it. And I left the Late Show and I was going right on to the next part of my life. And I'd met somebody very special in my life as well. And everything was going really well. And I had about a week after the Late Show and then that kicked off. For the last, it's got better now, but for a good 18 months, it was, you know, well, certainly for about a year, it was front page news every day, despite the fact that I felt there were probably bigger things to be talking about, but it became just a sport then. Yeah.
Look, there's no question that was possibly the hardest time of your life. There's no question that you were going through a really rough patch there.
I think it might have been for me, but I think that when we went into the Oireachtas that day in the car, actually went in my own in the cab, and I passed by a local school and two lads had just been killed on a holiday there at the age of 18, and I thought, that's a problem. What I'm going through is, it's annoying and it's not nice, but that's real. And to be honest with you, I just feel, look, and I've said this before, I wasn't driving to Crumlin to visit a sick child. You know, context.
Yeah.
And other people have bigger perspective, problems.
But it doesn't mean that, like, everything is just context at the end of the day. Like,
you have to put it into context, because otherwise, imagine somebody listening into this going, what is all that money and all that? That's, oh, you're sad and that was difficult. And, you know, and they're saying, well, you know, I've got bills to pay. I've got, you know, things to do. So I just don't think you should be looking for pity or sympathy for something like this. I didn't like it. It was not a nice time in my life, but it was so tough.
But you were saying there, Ryan, that out of the whole scandal, if you want to break it down, the percentages, who's to blame? They're 90%, you're 10%.
I think it's about that, yeah.
Yeah, but you were the only one who was brought up in front of the Oireachtas.
I was the only one who chose to go to the Oireachtas and tell the truth.
So do you not feel like a bit of a scapegoat? You are true under the bus here.
Well, I get told that on the street every day by people, by the public.
Yeah, but do you feel it?
Yeah.
There's one thing being told something, it's how you feel though.
Yeah, I do feel it was an unfair ending to the story. Yeah, I do. I didn't think there was any need to do what they did. I think it could have all been solved with a better conversation and a better communication, to be honest with you. I think that they were keen to find somebody to put in front of this. And then what happened was, then once everyone got their pound of flesh from me, then all this other stuff came out. Then RT was a mess, a financial basket case. And even in the dealings with me, it was really unorthodox. But I didn't ask for that unorthodox stuff that was happening over there. And then people went, oh, so the whole place is a basket case. It was just, they just shoved him there out front. So yeah, that was frustrating.
Yeah, I think
but I can't do anything about it.
I know you can't, but this is the cross you have to bear. You know what I mean? And I think the whole thing looks like the timing looks too coincidental, that it looks like you are true under the bus. That's why you're not there anymore. And then this whole scandal erupts. It looks like it was boiling. And the pot eventually boiled over.
That's not right.
But that's how it looks like from the outside,
well,
with the timing.
I wish it didn't, because it's not right at all. I looked in the mirror in my dressing room in March before I finished the late in June, and I said, I'm done. And I rang my daughters and I said, girls, you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to get out of here. I've had enough. And I went to my agent and my friends in the agency and said, I'm gone. They said, you can't, you have another year. And I said, I know, but if I stay on any longer, I'm out of juice, lads. I'm really tired. And that COVID 2 years took a lot out of me doing that show. And I don't have it. And if I drag my arse in there every week, I'm going to let the team down. I'm going to let the audience down. And I'm going to let myself down. I don't have it. Don't ask me to play the game on Sunday. I'm not match fit. And they got quite upset and said, okay, I can see it in your eyes. You mean this. I do.
Mm.
And then we did this big roll up to the end. And the last show, if you remember, well, last show was lovely. Like a couple of shows before, Ed Sheeran gave me a guitar and I did a duet with Bublé. And the last show, Paul McCartney sent a video message and all the staff and everyone came out to, with gifts and stuff. You don't do that to somebody who's about to cause chaos or to have chaos caused too. This was a bomb that I did not know was coming. So I was not connected. I know you, there might be a perception, but it's,
yeah, well, it's
not
just
true.
It's
the timings were mad. Timing, and actually, yeah, it has been argued that would they have put you out front if you were still the presenter of the HO? That's one of the conspiracy theories.
Yeah. But it just...
Because maybe I had retired and they said, well, we don't need him anymore.
I know you're sick to death of talking about this, but I mean, from the public, you need to realise, Ryan, like, there's people out there that are paying that TV licence.
Yeah.
I think there's becoming a bigger divide between not just the media, but the government in this country and the public, that they can't trust the media, they can't trust the government. I think when that scandal all came out, they lost 29 million in the TV license fees.
But that's not on me. As
no, it's not on you. But I mean, this is the public money. This is the people are speaking then with our money here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, I'm not paying that again. Then the government come and they bail out RTE for, what was it, like over 700 million or something?
Yeah. But this, like, is the point. I mean, that's why I have a very good relationship with the public. That's why there was no way I wasn't going to give back the 150 that I gave back. I couldn't go to sleep at night if I had that. And I had to, you know, come up with it. And get it. I just wanted it away because it wasn't right. I never wanted to have that. Once I wasn't doing the jobs, I'd take it if I worked for it, but I wouldn't if I didn't. So that trust issue is really, it's difficult. And it's a sad thing because there's a lot of good things in RTE, but they just had a peculiar way of doing business for a while. And I think they're working on cleaning that up.
What was the conversation like after the scandal came out with RTE? Mentally, where were you at when it came out?
I was completely dazed and confused. I didn't know what was happening. It was like being beaten around the head. Didn't know what was happening. And then it was. I got quite low, because I'm a very, very positive person. I kept it going, but it wasn't that nice. So, not good.
Mm. And was there a final conversation with you and people out of RTE? Was there a final conversation with?
No, there was a kind of a goodbye phone call from the boss to say that this isn't going to roll.
Thanks, Luke. See you later.
No, well, yeah, there was not. No, it wasn't. Gratitude wasn't very plentiful, but I had a lot of friends there still, some of whom I'm meeting after I finished chatting with you, which for a pint, and because I loved it there, and I got on great with the teams, and still do with a lot of people. But I think some people kind of felt that I was out of line, and I'm disappointed by that, because I think if you read the details closely and you read the two reports that said that I was exonerated, you know, but that doesn't get picked up. Even the fact when I gave back the money doesn't really get picked up. They just want they want you on the ground.
It doesn't tell, does it? Though?
Doesn't tell.
They're not going to put in. Ryan is great.
Yeah.
Ryan is sound.
No, and that's the disconnect, you see, with the media thing and then the people. People are so nice. Like it's bonkers. But the media are getting better. I think. I think when they realised that it was pretty top heavy. I think that they went, okay, maybe that was a bit much. I think so. Sometimes the humanity of the person involved in the story just gets forgotten about in a big thing like this. So thankfully I made a fairly strong stuff.
Yeah.
I had to be.
You were nearly... Sometimes you only find out in moments like that.
True, yeah.
Yeah, it was a test.
You were nearly damned if you did or damned if you didn't, Ryan. By owning up to it. But again, it's the whole public perception. It's like they're over there squandering our money. And then you're the only one to put your hand up and says, look, I'll come clean here.
Well, first of all, I'll show up for 7 hours in the Oireachtas. Secondly, I'll tell you everything I know, everything. Thirdly, if there's any money that I was given that I hadn't earned, it goes back. Check, check, check. Like, I've tried to do everything by the book as much as possible. I really haven't. I'm not...
And as you said, there's other people who didn't come clean, Ryan.
Well,
there's other people that should have been in your position.
Stay quiet.
Front of the Oireachtas.
And, you know, I went in with my agent and... You know, RT went in with a team of, I think, about 10 to 15, you know. I mean, it was, they were a big old machine, you know, to be up against.
Mm-hmm.
And not an easy time.
Would you go back to RTE?
Yeah, I would. I don't want to today or tomorrow. I'd do a bit of work there, here and there, for sure. But the problem is, I got very lucky. I kind of earned my way out of it in London. And I did 2 years kind of living in there. And now I have a show on a Sunday in London, and I've got a nice life now, and a lovely balance. For the first time in 20 years, I don't have a radio show in the morning. So I suddenly have a different... Put it this way, it all worked out. You know that song, It All Works Out? It all worked out really well. When you think of it, like somebody asked me on that, what would you change if you could press a few buttons in front of you? And I said, nothing, I can't change anything, because if I press those buttons, maybe I wouldn't have, you know, had my daughters, maybe I wouldn't have met Claire, maybe I wouldn't have, you know, and even if the RT thing hadn't happened, maybe I wouldn't have this lovely gig in London and this new experience. I wouldn't be here with you. You know, who knows? It's all the sliding doors thing. So I just have to accept it for what it is. And, you know, life is better now than it's been for a long, long time for me. So I feel very grateful for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should just tell my face, but yeah, it's true.
Well, I think what helps you a lot, I think, is you were very honest with the situation. You accepted you were wrong. You gave money back. And I think there's two sides where a lot of people will say, I appreciate his honesty, and sure, he gave the money back, that some would say, if you didn't earn it. And then there's the other side, there's the townies who go, he's dead right, he's a legend, you'd do the same, you would have.
There's a lot of people who say, you know, would you have turned that down? Like, I was given advice, don't give that money back, you legally don't have to, you know. Yeah. I know, but morally I wanted to, even though I didn't have it to give back, but I wanted to get it off the, you know, because it was a stick that people beat you with. But you're dead right, there are people who go, like, oh yeah.
You walk through the inner city and ask them, they would say I'm wrong for giving it back.
I was in the inner city not too long ago, and I swear to God, I got a lot of fellas shouting out their cars, and it was nice. It was, I was kind of going, okay, what am I going to get here? You know what I mean? And I say that about anywhere, but they were good, they were buzzing, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
What do you make of all that?
There was only one shocking thing you said, I feel, and that was that you'd go back to RTE there. I didn't, nothing else there was shocking to me.
Yeah. It's largely because it would be foolish to say no to anything. Like, don't forget, I'm going to put myself up there, it's Sean Connery, who said he'd never do James Bond again, and of course he did. Never say never again. But no, I mean, you know, myself and Sean Connery.
James Bond joke, Terry. Yeah.
Going back.
Never seen it.
Never seen James Bond?
No. It's a long story.
I missed that episode. Okay, yeah, I got to listen back.
It's another long story.
It's another world. Okay.
I love how we just moved on. I was like, no, hang on for a minute, that's gone over his head.
Yeah.
Relax, we have to explain.
You know the expression, never say never again. No, but I mean, look, it'd be a while. I think there probably have to be some water under the bridge and you know, some changes, and but we'll see. I wouldn't be rushed. I'd work for News Talk, I'd work for Today, but I'm actually quite busy at the moment, so I actually wouldn't have time to go back.
That's what they all say when you want more money, isn't it?
I'm going down to tell you one downstairs I'm signing you tomorrow. Yeah.
Tell your boss.
That was the only shocking part, Ryan.
Oh well, I just think it'd be, could you imagine if I said no way, no, I hate the place, I just think that you could find yourself in X amount of years going, oh, that sounds nice, I'd like that little gig there, you know, and it's close to home, and you know, it'd be handy.
Yeah, it's a bit like the FAI now as well, isn't it? It's like it was
it's going up in my head.
Yeah, well, as in the sense that they kind of ran themselves into the ground, they got an L bailout, and now it's like, right, we've cleaned house,
deliver.
Now it's time they kind of get new blood in here.
Yeah,
it won't be the same RTE you left.
No, it won't. And God, didn't I leave it at the right time? Because, like, you know, analog TV or terrestrial TV, it's a tough place to be now, because everyone's on YouTube, and everyone's, you know, channels, and so it would have been. Yeah, I think. Again, weirdly, got out at a very good time.
Yeah, I think it's just another challenge that you need to be more creative and putting higher quality telly. Just bring back Love Hate.
Do you know what?
A new season of Love Hate.
I loved Love Hate. I loved Pure Mew Love Hate. I quite like Kin though, but not as mad. Love Hate is better.
Yeah.
I think that's not controversial to say.
You know the singers?
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you one?
Go for it.
Of course you can.
Jesse Buckley, Paul Mescal.
Paul Mescal.
Oh.
No, I jumped the gun there. I don't know why I jumped the gun.
Oh, wait a second.
I jumped the gun.
Confidence of that.
I don't know them.
Jesse Buckley, he's only had to win an Oscar.
He just won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Are you under the bloody opera?
Yeah. He's trying to catch up with Bleeding James Bond, and you're asking him to watch Hamlet.
Yeah, but I'm not asking to watch Hamlet.
Never say never again.
Yeah, you got that. Yeah. Anyway, so you said definitely Paul Mescal.
No, not definitely. I'm lying saying that.
Definitely maybe.
I jumped the gun. Like, it's very hard to argue when, like, I know Paul Mescal's, he's starting to get into blockbuster films. He was in the new Gladiator. He's going to be in the Beatles. But she's at the one in the fucking Oscar. Like, you know what I mean?
What's your answer? Come on.
Right, you have these moments, don't you? Where you're like, get to the fucking point.
I go Jesse Buckley.
Hey, what a turnaround.
The pedigree is there.
On a coin.
She's done it.
Okay, I love it. Fair play.
Mascot is hard to be.
That's what I'm saying. Until he goes out and wins the Oscar 30.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then he'll get there. Argument. He'll get there.
Yeah.
Ryan. And by the way, I love Barry Keoghan.
Yeah, what a man.
Love what Barry Keoghan. And he was on... He came on the Late Late Show the first time when I said, oh, man, you've got it. And we were laughing. It's a famous clip in some ways because I said, you're going to win Oscar. I said, will you come back when you win them? When you win an Oscar, he said, I'll bring back two. And he did the three Oscars at the thing. And actually, you know what? He's on my mind a lot this week because he's been saying in media that he really feels he's been persecuted online for comment about himself. And after that Late Late Show, I called him the next day because online went bananas, saying mean things. And I called him. I said, "You're on the start of this odyssey, and you're one of the greats. That's just what's happened to you. You're one of the greats. You know what we do with the greats? We try to ungrate them. So you just stay strong. You're gonna be all right. And I hope he's okay wherever he is. If anyone knows him, would you just pass on?
Yeah, it's mad because he was saying that he was getting bleeding abuse like up at his family home, and I was thinking like the fuck, some neck knocking at our house.
I tell you what.
And they give someone abuse, do you know what I mean? That's like things.
Not only that,
in town
hands as well.
But obviously he's not anyone. There. He's not there.
Yeah, can he?
Yeah,
he's able.
Oh, you don't want to go up to him and say.
But it's not even that. He's not there. Like if someone knocks at your mask up, I was like, this is the inner city, like, do you know what I mean? No, like if someone's looking for a fight, you don't ring the police. You know what I mean? You ring your cousin.
Yeah.
No, genuinely. Sort of right. That's how it is. Like I remember reading something before, and people were talking about impoverished areas and how like they kind of police themselves and all. And I was like, yeah, but if someone's having a disagreement, what's the point of ringing the police? Because you could settle it, and it'd be settled then and there. Give it 20 minutes, bang, and it's forgotten about. Yeah. Why would you ring the police? You know what I mean? And
I hear you.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Ryan.
Lads.
What gets you excited going forward? What's your goals now?
Well, I've landed this show on Times Radio that I'm loving because it's 3 hours of basically news, cinema. I just love it. It's like my brain out on the radio. So that's been a goal met. That's where I wanted to be about a year ago. So that's really good. The Bookshelf podcast is going great. And now we're doing a tour around the country, right? So we're going to go to Limerick, Galway, Cork, 3 Olympia. Friday show sold out, so that's great, in Dunleary. And I'm excited to get it back up in front of a crowd again. Ready for that now. Couldn't have done it a year or two ago.
Mm.
Just didn't have the confidence, but I'm back now. So I'm feeling better about myself and ready for that. Nervous, but ready. And in the future, I think I'd like to do a bit of TV again, but my story is I'm still hungry, but I'm not starving.
Mm.
And that's a nice
peckish.
Way. I'm peckish.
Yeah,
I'm peckish for. I don't want a big steak. I just want a little tapas. A documentary there, a little special there. So you know, I don't want a show or a series or you know. But I'm happy to do a little bit of TV here and there. And I've been talking to some people about documentaries, and that would really suit me because I like telling stories and I like telling people about stuff. Like, look at this, like a history teacher or something like that. So I'd love to do something like that. So that's it. I don't have, look, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. Are my daughters healthy, happy and thriving? Yes. Have I married an extraordinary person? Yes. How's my mother? She's doing all right. How are my sisters? They look after me. How are my brothers? They're good for a pint. Could you ask for much more than that?
No.
How are your pals?
Yeah.
We had a bag of cans watching the match the other night. How did that go? We're commons. We just picked up from where we left off. Where am I going after this? O'Donoghue's for a couple of pints with some pals from RT. Lads, our worst places to be.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
Ryan, before we got started, you asked me, did I have a spot in the country that I love to go to? And you were saying that Galway has a place in your heart and this, that and the other. And then I was explaining that my in-laws are from Wexford, but I don't like it because it's too quiet. And you said, stop, talk about this on the podcast.
Brilliant.
So let's pick it back up.
Yep.
What did you want to talk about?
That was very smooth and brilliant. That's just about, I think there's people, so you're talking about your missus saying she wants quiet. And you were saying you can't handle quiet. We didn't talk to what your story is with quiet or your own. Are you comfortable with your own thoughts? Depends where you're at. Okay. Now, maybe it's a man thing. I don't know. We should drag you into this, Shivansi. But point being, when I wake up in the morning, I actually read. I get a coffee and I read. So for me, reading is like a podcast in the sense that it's a distraction, right?
Yeah.
Love it. And if I'm not reading, it's the radio. And if it's not the radio, I like proper radio, it's podcast. And if it's not podcast, it's music. But there's always something shaking, something going on. The other thing is, I live on a really busy road. I love the window open and I love the buses hurtling. Like I can wake up at 5:15 and go and hear, and I know that's the door of the bus opening. And there's a guy, I call him the working man. I joke with Claire, I look out, the working man is there. He's the hardest working, I don't know who he is, I know where he's from, He's there every morning at about, what, 5:45. And I thought, that guy, I just admire him. I don't know who he is. But I can tell by the sound. And obviously now that you're into the dawn chorus at March, April, so you hear the birds, you know, right? That's, so there's a certain bird will tweet and you go, yeah, that's just a robin or something. Then you hear the seagull might be going, you go, oh, right, they're up. Right, now it's pushing on. You can tell by the sound, you know, the soundscape. I love it. And then if it's the weekend, you know, the cars are going, do I sound insane? I'm just saying.
Yeah, a little bit. No,
can I just finish by saying, that then if we ever go away somewhere, I'll say to the hotel guys, what's the noisiest room? Like, don't put me in the back where it's really quiet and it's that death silence.
Yeah.
I won't sleep a wink.
Yeah. Hate it. And you know what else I hate? John, when you go down the country and you look out the kitchen window and it's pitch black. You
don't
can't
like
see
that.
A thing.
Don't like that.
I hate it.
Don't like that.
Boys, you was at Lewis and your marbles. You sound like a man who's had to do 20 years of television, right? And now you're gone from it and you're like, oh, I have nothing but time on me.
It's 5 in the morning I'm talking about.
The buses.
Yeah.
I'm like,
you know who he is?
Time.
He's Brooks out of the Shawshank.
Oh, I'm Shawshanking.
Yeah. 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 You're institutionalized.
I'm institutionalized by it all.
You're not able for the real world. No, you can't adapt.
I'm not able. I can't adapt. I walk into the pub going, hey, everybody. I go, oh, you? Nah.
Yeah.
No. But like, it is adapting. But like, I was laughing when I went to London the first time. I was walking down the street and you'd hear the meep, meep. And I go, yeah. And my daughter would say, Dad, they're not waving at you. Yeah, they're not at home them. Anymore.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't Kansas anymore, Toto.
Yeah.
No, that's a movie reference. Yeah. And you sit in the tube going, where are the phones? Like, why isn't anyone going like that and that? No, you're a ghost. And that felt good too. That felt lovely. And then you kind of go, right, I've done 2 weeks of that. Yeah, and I think my ego needs
I'm ready to go back now.
Back
home
to the airport going,
yeah.
Do you want a selfie? I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just offering her up.
Yeah, must be somebody wants a selfie.
Brilliant, Ryan.
What a pleasure it's been. Hey, really has,
do you know what, Ryan? You've been very patient. You haven't been looking at the door. You're not like looking to get out of here.
Oh, no, I was here.
I was kind of nudging parents, being like, "How are we going to get rid of him now?" Like,
yeah. We're now into that stage. Yeah,
I didn't even go to the toilet that time. I text Calvin saying, "Fuck him out."
How much time does this guy have?
Yeah,
this is bad.
Yeah, no, but really, thanks for your time, Ryan, because there are some moments sometimes where I guess where you're like, they need to get out of here.
Yeah, you and you been can like tell.
That. Okay, can you really?
Oh, yeah, it's horrible.
Start doing a bit of that.
Yeah, and you know, they're kind of speeding through the story, so you skip a part to get the, like, for example, it'd be like, you start the late, tell us about the scandal, and you're like, you know, if you're looking at the door, you have all that, but I feel like we had a good conversation.
Well, I appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't sure what to expect in the sense that, I'd hear the podcast, I know the style of the show and your guy's story, but it was really lovely and it kind of went all over the place. And we don't know each other, which is kind of interesting. I would have loved to have had you on the Late Late Show.
But you didn't.
14 years, Ryan. 14 years.
Yeah. I would have loved to have had this conversation on the or even on the radio. But anyway, here we are.
Yeah.
And
we got there eventually.
Here we go.
You got there eventually.
Never say never again.
Yeah. Never say never.
It's a James Bond film. James Bond, he's a spy. It's a spy movie thing.
No, yeah. See you in Kansas and all.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's the Wizard of Oz.
Wrapping up, Siobhan.
Grab it up. Where can you get the tickets for your show, Ryan?
Oh, just follow the theatres that they're in on go to the bookshelf or follow me on Instagram, Instatubberty. It's all there.
Perfect. Terry, how'd you feel with your first one back?
Great, yeah. It was the best guest I could have had on, I think, for waffling.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if we had a guest here that you're pulling strings with, I'd have been like, oh no, it's a
question
back. You haven't stopped,
yeah,
which is a good thing.
That's a good thing. Okay. Well, I know that if I dig deep enough, there's a compliment in there somewhere.
Yeah. No, that was a compliment, I swear.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks for coming in, Ryan. Take us out, Siobhan.
Boom. That's us for this week. Thanks to the legends at Roy Style Furniture Shop for the support.
Speaking of great support, see what I did there? Roy Style has everything, and I mean everything. Sofa sorted, beds covered, dining table, 6 chairs, boom, all in one house package. Plus, the lads in the store are sound as well. And if you're more of an online shopper, that's no problem. Visit www.roystyle.ie and when you shop in store, tell them that the two boys from the podcast sent you and they'll throw you in a little discount.
What's not to love?
I'm telling you, don't sleep on this deal. Unless it's on one of the mattresses, in which case, fair play.
Roy Price, Roy Style, right now.
So get down to Roy Style Furniture today.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up in. Work it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker. Long, cut down.